Thank you for downloading the latest podcast from the Canada-Europe Transatlantic Dialogue, housed at Carleton University in Ottawa. The interviewees were in conversation with Helen Morris. For terms of use, please refer to the publication section of our website at www.carleton.ca/Europe Cluster.
My name is Denny Ellerman, and I'm a senior lecturer retired at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology.
Your talk outlined how Europe has developed its emissions trading system. Is it a case of only in Europe, or are there elements of the way in which Europe formed the market which could work in North America?
I don't think it's only in Europe. I think it can work in North America as well as in other countries. And I think it's really studying their system as well as others to see what are the features that make it possible for something to happen as it did in Europe.
How much of a role do you think individuals play versus the system of government? I mean, you talked about a few good men. How important is that versus the systems that we have in Europe versus the systems we have in North America?
I think they're both important. And I think it is, when we talk about individuals, I'm really talking here, what would be advocates, opponents, how well informed they are, how competent they are, and what they do. I mean, any major political issue, you'll have people for and against. And it's always important if you're an advocate that you know what you're doing, that you're realistic about it, and if you're more so than your opponents, you have a much better chance of prevailing.
Can you pull out a couple of the elements from the European experience which maybe would be of particular value to North American policymakers?
What I find to be the similar points are getting the political context right and waiting for the right moment. I think this is true in general in politics, but it's not possible to do everything at once, and it requires a lot of what I would call understandings among interested parties that have to be usually painfully negotiated out. This typically takes time, and then usually there's some other precipitating event which will then make it the obvious thing to do, and you've worked out all the technical details, so it's sort of there primed to go, but then it's this further thing which lets it go. And I think that's sort of true of all systems.
In terms of the issue of pricing carbon, you mentioned during your talk that this is just something that hasn't been done before. And what are some of the concerns and worry that business has in terms of pricing and how that's going to affect their competitiveness in an international market where not everybody is facing the same levels or even pricing at all in carbon?
Right. Well, I think this is obviously a concern. It's like a new price. It's just like a new requirement being placed upon them. It's a different type of requirement. In this case, it's a price. So they don't have prior experience with it, and there's less room to negotiate. You don't negotiate this price, unlike you might say how a regulation would be implemented on them. So there are bases for concern. It's easy to exaggerate the basis of that concern. I think it depends a lot on, how important is the price, how important is carbon in the manufacture of whatever it is. I mean, we know any number of products where carbon is an insignificant proportion of total cost. Others where it's more important, and obviously it's going to be greater concern. But those are part of all the understandings and the compromises that have to be worked out in enacting any such system.
Looking ahead, what are some of the challenges that businesses are likely to face in terms of these carbon markets evolving and perhaps becoming larger scale than they are now?
I think the biggest problem they face is political change. I mean, this is always a constant, but would be, let's say the carbon market is in place. I think businesses adapt to this very well. We've seen this on all, whether it's sulfur dioxide markets, NOx markets, CO2 markets in Europe. They adapt well. The uncertainties, particularly when it comes to investment, is how durable are these systems? What is the degree of citizen support in the future? You could take an example, I would say, like in Germany with the nuclear phase-out. Are they really going to phase out nuclear power? That's what the law says, but it's openly in debate. So what do you do in terms of investment? Do you actually invest in non-nuclear capacity to replace it? But if that gets reversed or that law modified 5 or 10 years from now, then you're stuck high and dry with investment perhaps that isn't as valuable as you thought it was. And I think that applies to carbon markets as well, because in the end it is the government that determines what the level of stringency and this is a market created by governments, unlike other markets.
And is there anything else you think we need to be thinking about in terms of this issue of the politics behind the creation and evolution of carbon markets?
Yes, my word is thinking about the distribution allocation. I think what has emerged now is allocation is the big issue. I think we know the design issues. These, a lot of things take care of themselves, and we know more or less. But what to do that these systems inconveniently create this enormous value of the scarcity rent that has to be distributed somehow. And what to do with it is a problem that we're now confronted with and we can't deny. And I think it's going to slow things down as we sort of work out solutions that will satisfy people and get a majority vote.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure talking with you, Helen.